Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Good evening, good afternoon and good morning everyone, people here and people who are listening on the podcast. This is another episode on A to D. This time is more like a discussion, no special guest. We're going to be talking about the pro-life argument, life after birth. Now, in previous episode, we talked about abortion, presenting two significant premises. First, that life begins at birth. And the very act of abortion is the killing of an innocuous child, an innocent child. We also had counter arguments like women have right to their bodies, therefore she can decide to obliterate the unborn. We also saw arguments that killing the child or the act of abortion somehow prevents the child from living an impoverished life if the child has been born. We also had people on the pro-choice side talking about the mother's mental health during the period of pregnancy. And we also had people also talk about in the cases of rape. So if a girl is raped, if a woman is raped, then the act of abortion is not wrong in any case of rape. However, during this particular talk show, I think this is on the sixth or fifth episode where we talked about abortion, pro-life, pro-choice. You can go back to previous episodes to listen to it. While we're still having these arguments and back and forth, the pro-life arguments still remain the same, that abortion is tantamount to first-degree murder. And many on the opposing side, many pro-choice still believe that the pro-life people or people who are pro-lifers are just concerned with conception and birth. This particular episode, we are going to be talking about how people who are pro-life can extend their beliefs or their premise to even after birth. So this is also going to help. This is more like a counterpoint to the pro-choice argument about impoverished life. We'll try to make solutions to the pro-choice argument of impoverished life. I have the child living in an impoverished life and the woman's mental health. And this is going to be a very open discussion. I have people here who I believe are pro-choice. I have people here who are pro-life, and I have someone here who is anti-abortion. Right. Now, I want to throw a question to anyone who is willing to answer, and you can indicate by raising up your hand. First, do you think that the act of abortion is killing a baby? And if you think so, if you don't think so, do you think it should be legal? Do you think abortion should be legal? So the question is, do you think abortion is outrightly killing the baby? If your answer is no, then do you think it should be legal in Nigeria and other parts of the world where it is not legal? Does anybody want to answer that question? Okay. Second question. If you think that the very act of abortion is killing a baby, and you believe so, yes, it is killing a baby, what are your reasons why you think the act of abortion is killing the baby? If you want to answer, your hands up. I think I should be able to see people's whose hands are up. Okay, Ebolu, you can go.
Good evening, everyone. So, I feel abortion is killing a child because the child has already started developing in the woman's womb. So, you're already bringing a life to this world, no matter how small the fetus is. Mm-hmm. Or if it's already developed, so you are therefore killing a child, you're killing a life.
Yeah.
You're snuffing someone from existence. So I believe that is killing. But abortion, people have different reasons why they commit abortion.
Yeah.
7 out of 10 ladies have faced sexual issues in Nigeria, I was listening to a podcast from Dr. Kemi Da Silva, the founder of Warif, and she said during the lockdown, we're facing two pandemics, the pandemic of the coronavirus and the pandemic of sexual violence. So when you look at people that have committed abortion, they have various reasons. Some of them might just not just be for the pleasure of it. It might be that they were sexually abused. So they don't want that stigma of having that child reminding them of what they went through. So there are different approaches or different meanings to people committing abortion. I feel it just depends on where your mindset on or how it happened that the child was developed. So that's my own take on it.
Yes, thank you, Bolu. And you see, one of the important arguments that a pro-choice people bring forward about the very act of killing a child is in the case of rape. And rape is a heinous act. I believe rapists should be killed. I mean, outrightly killed, castrated and killed, right? Sentenced to death. But again, the question is, when you look at the statistics on the reasons why people commit abortion, you would, well, there was a study that was done. 70% of women said they commit abortion because of mental health. So what a good majority said because of the child living, they're trying to prevent the child from living an impoverished life. Some other people said, you know, I'm not ready for a baby and all whatnot. And this particular argument of incest or rape puts people who are on the pro-choice side or who are on the pro-life side in a state where it's our argument may not seem to make sense anymore. So I'm going to throw another question to the floor. And this is my question, right? This is for pro-choice people. Do you think financial reasons and the very reason of financial reasons, mental health during pregnancy, and not being ready for the child is a good enough reason to kill a child? This is for pro-choice people. So I believe I have very few pro-choice people on this call or in this meeting. So, okay. Since I have very few pro-choice people, I'll continue with my pro-life argument. Now, people who are pro-life here, I just want to push an argument that says that even if we are so concerned about conception and birth, we should also push our arguments in a more pragmatic manner to after birth. And the way we can do it is in several ways. One, the very first major issue for committing abortion is financial reasons. There was this study by BMC Women Health. They did a study on this. Financial reasons, 40% of women said that the reason they want to commit abortion is because of financial reasons. I'm unemployed, I don't have enough money to cater for the child and all whatnot. Now, 36% said, not the right time for the baby. I wasn't ready. This wasn't the right time. I didn't imagine myself being pregnant. But then 31% of the same people talked about partner-related reasons. So all this particular research or this particular survey was done just on women. They were asking women questions on why they were committing abortion. So 31% said partner-related reasons. The wrong guy, they're having a toxic relationship, so therefore they want to abort the child. Then a good number, I think 29% of women said they need to focus on other children. So they have like two kids or three kids, and they're not ready to get another one or to raise another child. Now, some other people said, a new baby would interfere with future opportunities. This is for people who are still in college, people who are still trying to start up a career. I know that's 20%. Now, 19% said not emotionally or mentally prepared. 12% said health-related reasons. And if you keep going, by the time you see the reasons, it's there are solutions for every single reason. And I'm going to try and answer these questions or this. I'm trying to give a counter argument to these reasons. Now, as a pro-life myself, I believe the killing of a baby, abortion, are all the same thing. Not this unifism that they call Planned Parenthood. Killing of a child, like Bully, you said, is wrong. And I do not see, I find it very difficult to see any valid point on why a child should be killed, especially the valid point from the majority of the points that people give. Now, since I want this to be a discussion, financial reason is the first thing that I'll try to give a solution to. 40% of women say, financial reason. I don't just have money. I don't want this baby with me. I want it gone. How can we pro-life help in a situation like this? Now, I believe, one, as a pro-life person, you should be very open to adopting. You can't say no to abortion and still say no to adoption. Now, this is not a decision you can make by yourself just alone. You need your partner, you need your spouse, and all whatnot. Parents, grandparents, to make this particular decision. But if you cannot adopt, then you have to help finance foster homes. Now, I'll give you the reasons why. If a woman says that the reason why she wants to abort a child is financial reasons, okay, we would help you. This is providing a solution to this. We would help you with the pregnancy, the 9 months, giving you as much good health care you need during the period of your pregnancy. This is when the child is born. If you still do not want to keep the child because of financial reasons, then there are either foster homes you can send the child to. The child can be sent to a good family, and in maybe 18 years or 10 years, whatever the timeline you need to get yourself financially ready, you can come and pick up a child. So do you think that this particular argument of saying, or this particular pro-life argument of saying, if financial reason is your problem, just go through the 9 months of pregnancy, give birth to your child, would put your child through, would send the child to a very good family, foster homes, and when you're financially ready, you can come pick your child. Do you think this particular argument is a valid point? I mean, if you think so, you know, you just have to raise up your hand. And I would. Yeah, Daniel. You can go.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Good evening. And thank you so very much for allowing me to be part of this conversation. Now, by default, I am pro-life because I'm a Christian. You know, it doesn't mean I can fully defend it because I just haven't really been into this conversation yet. But concerning the matter of finance, I think personally, when I hear finance, I automatically hear an argument made from a point of selfishness, because it's kind of like money is, we live in Nigeria, let me come from the Nigerian perspective, money is always a problem. You know, money is never enough. There will always be a financial issue. Then if it's, you know, and the financial issue comes in various degrees. You say, oh, I don't have enough money. Even when you have enough money, no, I'm working towards a promotion. That's also, when we talk about career, most of the time we talk about career in a very, very financial form. So that's also like financial issues that can be raised as an objection. So I believe for most women, I'm not saying for all, I believe even if you figure out a way for finance, you know, to bump them up to the higher ranking of the middle class, you know, where money won't be too much of an issue and they can support themselves and a single child, you know, I still do not think that the person would go and pick up that child because they are now financially stable. Because at that point, I believe they'll raise another objection of, you know, they are just making ahead of their life. They are just getting their life back together. You know, they're about to get a promotion at work, you know, all these kind of things. And it kind of boils down to, like, the problem, I think, is not the finance. So, like, I don't think, even if the pro-lifers say, okay, let's create an institution that helps you get your finance together in 9 months or in 2 years, and then you can go and pick up your baby and start raising your child, I don't think it will still provide a solution to that objection, because it's just based on selfishness, I think.
Okay, so Daniel, let me just give a different perspective to what I said as regards to the foster homes, right? It is not in...
Okay.
It is... There are people who drop off their children at foster homes and never come to... As in, they don't care about it anymore. They don't care about the child. They just... Oh, the child is in the foster home. Okay, that's fine. They don't even want to go back. But the reason why I'm saying in 2 years, in 3 years, in 4 years, whatever the timeline is, you can come back and pick up your child, is this. People on the pro-choice side always say this, oh, you're separating the child from his or her mother. And I'm like, I think that is better than ultimately killing the child. But then they begin to point out another argument saying, but if the child is going to be alive, then why are you going to separate the child from the mother? And I'm saying, okay, fine. I get your point about separating the child from the mother. And I get to a point that this woman is not financially ready to take care of this child. So what do? We take the child to a foster home, a good family. In whatever the timeline it may be, you can always come back and get your child back. Now, for example, if you know, I'm sure you know Thomas Sowell, right?
Yes.
Sowell was adopted to a white family. He's a black man. He was adopted to a white family. And he says that if not for the kind of family he was raised in, he wouldn't be where he is today. And he, I mean, see the amount of value he has added to the world. And he pretty much still knows his mom. So and I get your point of, so the question I want to ask you then, are you saying that financial reason based on this study that has been done is not a strong point of argument to abort the child? And there is no way to solve this problem of, I don't have enough money to raise a child.
Yeah, I agree. I actually agree with that. Finance, can you hear me very well?
I can hear you very well.
Okay. I also agree that finance is not reason enough for abortion.
Yeah.
Like I said before, finance will always be a problem. Like, money will always be a problem. Now, so, if you say, let me finish this. If you say, okay, abort the child because the mother will not be financially stable enough to raise the child, then shouldn't we just make a law that bans poor people from having children altogether if the child is going to be raised in an impoverished home if they have a child?
Yes, so you see, this what you just said now is a point that I'm going to raise, and it's going to be a very is it going to be a counterpoint to the pro-choice people. And now you just said, let me just say that right. You know, when the pro-choice people on the pro-choice side say, "My body, the woman's body, my body, my choice," right? And when they say, "Give all these reasons," I say, "See." People do not wake up pregnant. Like, you don't go to bed and you wake up pregnant.
True.
There are steps, there are choices you make that leads to pregnancy. And you completely avoid all those choices. Choice of being celibate till you're married. Choice of, I mean, condoms are quite cheap. They are contraceptives. There are several ways, and you avoid all the choices you're supposed to make. And the moment you, in quote, fall pregnant, then you now want to express the choice of your body by completely obliterating human life. So even this particular thing amazes me. And it is something that I think that people just say because of life's a social construct. So it's quite amazing. So financial reason.
Yeah. Let me just jump on that.
Okay.
Can I jump on that quickly?
Yeah, you can.
So it's kind of like I'm somebody who I can't really describe myself as conservative and liberal because I'm like, let me hear what you want to say, and then I think about it, and then, you know, I formulate my own opinions and, you know, whatever the truth should be about it. So it's kind of like when somebody says, my body, my choice, I agree with that statement because, yes, it is your body, it is your choice. But then the conversation now follows that let us now ignore consequences of your choices. It's like, that shouldn't be a thing. For instance, now, I heard this argument a lot that men should protect women who are drunk. And I'm like, I'm not up for that. I'm not going to protect you from the consequences of the choice you made. You know, because we live in a society now that teaches women that the consequences of your choices can be excused.
True.
You know, and I'm like, no, you go to most women, if you go to, if anybody goes to a bar, usually the reason for going to a bar is to go have a good time, right? If you make the choices of buying the drinks because you have to pay for them, make the choices of buying the drinks or seducing a guy to buy the drinks for you, you are actively using the choices of your body. You know, so those things follow consequences. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not about to say that, oh, you know, take advantage of women at every point. No, it's like we need to teach people to all constantly recognize that there are consequences for these things. You understand? And if people acted more in the consciousness of that, there are consequences, I think more people will make better choices. Now, I'm not saying there will never be, you know, stages or moments where even your choices are devoid from, like you are devoid from making those choices yourself. But it's more like your body, your choice, yes, that is the truth. But what are the choices that you are making and what are the consequences of those choices?
Yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. I actually agree with you because at the end of the day, it is your body. At the end of the day, it's your choice. But you see, well, I see your hand up. I would let you speak shortly. But you see, the issue I have with that, my body, my choice thing is, again, if your body, your choice, and the consequences of that particular statement affects just you, then that's fine. That's completely fine. But you see, you are affecting people, human life. These people do not have consciousness. They can't speak. So what you're doing is actually murder. It is your choice. So if I say my body, my choice, and I'm like, oh, my body, my choice, and I take my gun, in America, I have the rights, the Second Amendment to bear arms. It is my constitutional right to bear arms. And I take my constitutional right, and I go to a supermarket, and I'm like, my choice, Second Amendment, and I just shoot at everybody. Bro, I will go to jail. I'll be sentenced to life imprisonment or death. But I made a choice that, in quote, may be in my constitutional right to bear arms. But you see, it is something that, as you said, about liberals and conservatives and all, I feel like we are getting to a point where people are becoming more radical on the left and on the right. So it's actually, for me, we are getting to a social, what I call societal travesty. But let's see what you have to say. Your hand has been off.
Hi, Daniel. So quickly, I just wanted to jump on your point about if a woman is drunk. So first of all, let me put this point. Consent, because we need to protect women, because we know the majority of women get raped because of things like this. Like, they get raped because they are drunk and the rest. So when you come up with this definition about what is consent, like, a woman cannot really give her consent when she's drunk, when she's under the influence of drugs or alcohol and the rest. So if you have sex with a lady that is under the influence of alcohol, is most likely taken as rape nowadays from people's view of things. So I think that's why we are asked to protect ladies. So I feel that protection is key. also, as a man, you also need protection when you're on under influence of alcohol and drugs. That's why you're not supposed to drink and drive. Things like that.
Okay, yeah. So, Bull, I get your point, right? But I don't want us to derail. What we're talking about here is the reasons why people commit abortion, right? And the whole, like, my point still remains the same. People do not sleep and wake up pregnant. There are processes. There are choices you make. And those choices can be avoided. Those choices can be, it can be prevented. So if people take particular steps that lead them to become pregnant, you tried to say, should we make it illegal illegal for poor people to give birth to have children? I don't know if that is a case. I mean, I don't know if that is something that I would support. But again, the point is, if you're going to have financial reasons, then or for not raising a child, but in the first place, do not get pregnant. But again, you get pregnant, right? Mistakes happen. How can we resolve the issue? So I feel like setting up foster homes, helping the woman during the point of pregnancy, for mental health and whatever, and financial needs she may have is important. Now, pregnant woman, my body, my choice, Modra, my gun, my choice. That's IDK speaking. Now, so a particular woman under these financial reasons during the study said, I'm unemployed, no health insurance, I could not qualify for any government assisted aid, and even my fiance decided to hurry up and get married, I still wouldn't have been covered under his health insurance for that. This is a 32 year old woman. So the second reason people give is not the right time for the baby. Now 36% of the respondents said, see, it is not the right time for the baby. And again, people on the pro-choice side need to understand this. We need to understand that we are not living, we would never live in a utopian system where everything is peaceful, tranquil, and everybody is in the moral standard, right? So when they say not the right time for the baby, it sounds like the same thing as reasons, financial reasons, maybe stigmatization. So I think we can take a step further by saying, okay, fine, we get the point, not the right time for the baby. The problem, the issue that I have with many pro-life people is when a woman wants to commit abortion or have such thoughts, we completely stigmatize against the person. Oh, see, especially in Africa, here in Nigeria. Yes, maybe. I mean, she's a murderer, right? But she will be a murderer if she commits the abortion. But we just paint this picture of what? How can you think about this? I mean, are you okay? But again, this is the same thought that goes through someone who is suicidal. I mean, you can't be happy and kill yourself, right? So I feel like there should be pro-lifers should on a societal level should set up mental health consultancy for people who get pregnant under wedlock or who are pregnant and do not want to keep the baby. I feel we should take a step further. Now, this is, I want to throw a question to, I know I have a lot of pro-life people here. The question is, do you think that having three children, you don't want four children, you don't want four children, you have just three, and suddenly your spouse get pregnant, do you think that's enough reason to kill a child? And if that's not enough reason to kill a child, what do you do in such situations? Because again, children have a way of taking a huge chunk of your money. So what way can people, what do you think pro-lifers should do for people who have situations where, see, they honestly have three children, but now there is a fourth one coming in and they want to kill the child. So what do you think we can do to save the child? Let's talk about how we can save the child. Let's not stigmatize against the mother or try to cast down the mother. How can we save the child? So how can we save a baby in a situation where the baby is coming in where the parents needs to focus more on other children? Does anyone want to say anything? So, Bolu, your hand is up. Daniel, your hand is up. Is that supposed to be a mistake or something? I don't know. Bolu, your hand is up, so you can speak.
I think my hand was up previously.
Okay. Okay.
Well, let me just quickly jump on this.
Okay.
Okay. So, first of all, there's something called family planning.
Yeah.
So, I think you are meant to have done a family planning if you're educated enough when you get married to know the number of kids you want to have and how to desist from having sexual activity or what to do to prevent you from having kids after you have those number of kids. Mm. But I also feel that a lot of awareness has to be put in place. A lot of people are not aware of this family planning and the rest. Okay, I'm not going to call people less privileged, but those people that are less educated, that have no knowledge about this. What can we do to take this to the street, to let them know about this and that, about having kids and the rest? And I also feel abortion, it's not only from a woman's perspective. It comes from the family, the person's family. How would they take it if she brings home a child? Also, the man that got her pregnant, what is it doing to ensure that he wants this child, or it's not putting pressure on the person? So it's not only on the lady. I feel it's an all-rounder thing. It comes from everyone in the family, the community. Like, how are you going to take it when she comes home? That kind of thing. So
I honestly agree with you. I agree with you, Bol, because a lot of people, especially here, think of abortion because of what their parents are going to say, because of what the society is going to say, because of how the society sees them, and all this form of stigmatization. But you see, the issue with Africa is that everybody in Africa is sanctimonious until something happens that exposes them. And if you are talking about educating people on abortion, and while it is a very heinous act, liberals in America are going to be totally against it, right? Even you, like you talked about men also being involved in preventing abortion. The very act that in this particular meeting, we have more men than women talking about abortion case, to some radical liberals, it is not even accepted. We don't even have the right to speak on this particular topic because we are guys, right? But I can tell those liberals too that I may decide to identify as a woman because we have come into the gender fluidity, but I'm joking. So now, the point you made, Bolu, is important. But what I've also figured out is many people get pregnant. Many people that consider abortion, most of the time, they get pregnant outside marriage. And when they get pregnant outside marriage, you have the guy saying, man, I'm not ready for this. And you have the lady saying, so what do we do? And the man is like, see, you're on your own. And the man just disappears. And then that woman is left to either take care of the child alone or to solely make a decision to obliterate the child. In cases where the father is very much there and wants to make a particular decision, the counter argument I see with when the man tells a woman, see, don't come to abortion, especially when it comes from the father. People say, well, he's not going to be the one to suffer for 9 months. Oh, he's not going to be the one to face the pressure and the pressure and the hormonal change that comes with pregnancy. He's not going to be the person that's going to push the baby out of his or her, out of his belly. So he doesn't have any right to talk about issues like this. So, like, again, we're in a very, this is a very controversial topic. And it hits people where most times they don't even want to be hit. Daniel, I see your hands are up. Yeah, you can go.
Okay. So like both of you have said a lot. I agree with Bolu first off that yes, men need to be involved in this conversation. You understand? Like, as the one who got the egg fertilized, what the heck are you doing? Are you taking responsibility? Like, and like I said, it's not just women. In some ways, when it comes to this pregnancy issue and abortion issue, because for a while in Western civilization, fathers generally have been taken as second-class citizens. So it's always, when you look at child support, it's always, what does the woman want? When you look at abortion, what does the woman want? When you look at keeping pregnancy, what does the woman want? The man never gets a choice in these matters, except if he has a lot of money, you know, which is, I mean, chase a lot of money in the first place, because it gives them a choice. So it's kind of like this. I think first off, nowadays, I think the amount of people who don't know about family planning is less than we think. Family planning is basically split into two stages. There's the kind of like basic form, you know, the one where you use condoms. Everybody knows use condoms, for Christ's sake. Like, a friend was telling me about his uncle's family. And when they had firstborn, you know, it was all joyful. And then 4 months later, wife was pregnant. And it was like, how did this happen? And he was like, the wife is always coming to the husband and be like, oh, come in, let's do one more round now, you know, all those kind of things. Let's quickly go inside. And I was like, yes, I love the romance there, but they knew about condoms. He said it was until the third child, which was just basically like 6 months apart from the second child again, they started buying condoms regularly. And I was like, you knew about condoms in the first place, but you just didn't choose the choice because most people like it raw, it's sweet, it's this and that, you know. And I'm like, we know about family planning.
Yeah.
We know, we just don't make the choices to do family planning. It's not a lack of knowledge that's the problem, is the lack of willingness to make that choice. You understand? And you say, what can pro-lifers do? Yeah. It's like, what exactly do you expect? These are also people with their own lives, their own family, you understand? Their own consequences of choices to see to. So it's more like we need to, because when I look at pro-lifers and I look at pro-choice, there is a large degree of selfishness and hypocrisy in the arguments, in how people pose both arguments. And I think, first of all, we need to agree, first of all, on what basis are you doing these things? Most of the time, abortion comes from a very, very selfish basis. It's not, you know, I'm getting my life together. I don't have enough money. Even if she decides to keep the child, she decides to keep the child because maybe she sees some opportunity or something, or maybe she actually just wants to keep the child, which in a way also can be interpreted in a, as a very, very selfish motive. So, like, there is selfishness to go around to complete.
Daniel, let me just get, so let me ask this question. Are you saying that you can be, the very act of keeping the child is selfishness?
Not necessarily. In context, like you said, most people get pregnant. Most people that think of abortion get pregnant out of wedlock, true, which is something pro-choicers don't want to admit. Many of them are teenage girls, yeah, who are having fun, you know, being appreciated in a very, very sexual manner because of their beauty. And we like to think that girls don't do this thing, but I'm a teacher, and this is something I see every day. You know, how the girls will be like, let me clean now, let me sweep, you know. And he's so enamored that, oh, wow, she said, Lulu, dear. You know, girls do these things. We need to acknowledge that women also use sex as a weapon. And then when the consequence of it, and I agree with somebody you had on the first time you talked about this issue, I think, no, you're somebody. She said we shouldn't see children as consequences of sex. And I agree, but there are moments where they are consequences of sex.
True.
They are consequences of sex. So it's not like as if keeping the child is selfish. Is that in some context it is. Is she keeping the child because the person she got pregnant to is rich?
True.
So, you know, does that solve her finance?
So you
see, she doesn't have to work hard.
This particular point you made, we have seen this happen so many times and so many places. And I want to wrap this up as soon as I can.
Before I wrap this up, I want to add something. The concept of if you get pregnant, you have to keep it before was a deterrent to promiscuity. Because a guy can easily just disappear.
True.
A guy can easily just disappear. You understand? Leaving the woman with, you know, the decision to commit the act of abortion, which I think those men should also be held responsible for putting the woman in that position in the first place, because they also are not taking responsibility of the acts of what they've done. We need to also hold men responsible in this account, not just have the argument, not just have the discussion on women alone.
But you see, in Western civilization, the man doesn't have anything to say. He totally does not have a choice in this particular issue. It is a woman's body. It is a choice. And I'm like, see, the baby you guys are talking about has two pairs of chromosomes. It's not this. I mean, this is someone's, like, it's not just a child. You get, and like one thing that I find very ridiculous is we have seen cases where people, I mean, this is very common in the Black community, where the government pay single mothers, right? So I'm trying to corroborate your point on how people can decide to keep the baby and be somehow seen as selfish. But while I want to do that, I also don't want to again say the very fact that what is important to me personally as a pro-life person is the child. It's the child being alive. I don't care what happens. If you're going to be selfish and in your selfishness you keep the child, well, so be it. Right? I don't care what gains you're going to have by being selfish. But the most important thing to me, and I think the most important thing to every pro-life person, is that child is alive and lives in a good environment. Because when you see, when they begin to infantilize single mothers, and people begin to say, okay, if I get pregnant, the government will help me, so therefore, I'll do it. I have seen, there was this particular news, I think this happened either in New York or California, I can't really remember, where a woman gets pregnant to a rich man, and the rich man was telling her, you know, about this thing, and we're not ready for this. And the mother is like, no, I'm keeping it. This is your child. And this man had to pay like $2 million in child care, something like that. So I'm just to wrap this up, does anyone else have anything to say as regards to how pro-life people can extend their argument from birth? Outside the fact that you want the child to live, is there any other suggestion you want to give as regards to how children or how the community can help mothers or help children who are just born to live good lives or to live lives that are not impoverished? But does anybody want to give their two cents before we wrap this up? Okay, so I'm not seeing any hands up. So I want to believe that people are still trying to, you know, have their thoughts together. So, Danny, I see your hands up. So, but let me just say something before you speak, right? The other reasons why people want to be the other reason why people want to abort the child. The other reasons, there are reasons spanning from stigmatization, like we talked about, but this is my two cents before I allow Daniel to speak and any other person that wants to speak. And if you're pro-choice, this is for you. People do not wake up pregnant. You as a pro-choicer, you avoid all the choices to keep you not pregnant, only to fight for the very choice the very choice not to be pregnant, and that choice means killing a child. So you avoid the fact that you stay single till you get married, or single till you get married, that doesn't make sense, but stay be celibate, basically avoid promiscuity at all costs. If you're going to have sex, then do it with condoms. There are contraceptives and all birth control things to keep you not pregnant, but we somehow avoid all these choices. Then when you now fall pregnant, in quotes, when you fall pregnant like an accident, you now turn to the very choice of killing a child. So that's my two cents. So Daniel, you can go.
Yes. So what I want to say is this, like, I kind of have something for both the pro life and the pro-choice sides of things. And it's basically that it's for the pro-choice. I think in the camp of pro-choice, there are, I think, two things that need to be done majorly. It's that, first things first, to acknowledge the true reason why most women would choose abortion. Is it truly because they care about the child, or because they're after their health, or just from a very, very selfish reason of not taking up responsibility? That's the first one. And then the second one is to think about the societal impact of a culture of that the culture of abortion would bring, you know, because we are because pro-choice kind of tends to focus on the now, but not thinking of what the effects of promoting abortion would do to the society, the culture it brings, like what the effects you have. And then for pro-lifers who tend to be mostly Christian, is that first things first, ask yourself the question. When you are put in the same situation as that woman who is currently looking to abortion, would you then become pro-choice? You know, ask yourself that question, because it's a question you need to be asked. And then the second thing is we are Christians. No matter if you disagree, we correct with love. You cannot create a culture of antagonizing people because of the choices that they have made, because you also are the same thing as they are. You have made highly questionable choices in life. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I find pro-lifers who stigmatize against pro-choice people or people who are at the verge of committing abortion or rather more ambivalent towards committing abortion, when they stigmatize against them, I find these people very, very deleterious to the entire society, because you cannot just tell someone not to commit abortion, or you know, you're a devil, you know what I mean? And then you don't try and provide other solutions or try to put your feet in their shoes. So Jake, you can go.
All right. Good evening, everyone.
Yeah, good evening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate you, Kelly, for everything you've done so far. But especially people drawing hard lines about, especially pro-life, saying that, oh, we cannot go against, like, we should not go for abortion at all. They draw a hard line, not considering the context around it. I think that's I feel that's something that is misplaces the whole entirety of, like, everything. It's not for the well-being of the child at the end, because if you look at the context of things, like, for instance, now, what is the mental well-being of the mother? What is the financial status of the mother? What is the society? What will, how society will react to the child being born out of the condition in which he is born into? It's a lot of things that people tension. Why? Because of things like morals and things like religion and tradition. It's fine to define all these things, yeah. But at the same time, if we do not give it enough context to say that, okay, the woman should have a right to not accept this baby based on prevalent situations, I think that would give a lot of dimensions to how we can balance the whole situation between pro-life and pro-choice.
So I don't know if I'm coming clear. Let me get you, Jay. Are you saying that there are some situations where considering the act of abortion is okay?
Yes, I am. I am saying that.
Okay, so what are the reasons?
Okay, for instance, in cases whereby the life of the child would endanger the life of the mother.
Yeah. I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you. Go on.
It's better now, yeah?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, cool. So, yeah. I said that in cases whereby the life of the child is going to be an infringement to the life of the mother, is going to basically interfere with the life of the mother, for some cases like ectopic pregnancies now.
Yeah.
In such cases, we should encourage abortion. Yeah, that should be a thing that should be encouraged. It shouldn't be like, try to see how it goes. You can't be playing with someone's life like that to say it's a 50-50 and let's see how it will go.
Yeah, is there another reason? Yeah. Is there another reason? I want to answer to this, but is there another reason?
Yeah, there are other reasons, for instance. Okay, for instance, now, let's say the especially in cases whereby the fetus has not matured to the state whereby there's brain activity. But then again, people will come at me and say that, oh, there is the inception of life, therefore there is life in itself. But, yeah. I mean,
so
that's another argument, yeah?
Yeah, so, Jake, so you have made very valid points, honestly. And you see, One of the issues that I try to bring solutions to most of the time is the major issues. Now, all you said, in cases where the mother, giving birth to that particular child is going to endanger the life of the mother, these are very rare cases. These are extremely very rare cases. a study was done, and the cases why people commit abortion, rape was less than 1%. This particular reason, is it ectopic pregnancy? I can't really remember the word you use. Is less than 0.5%. So what I try to do most of the time is I find it hard to give a clear-cut solution to such situations. Michael Lockwood in my previous podcast said, well, the doctor has to try to save both the child and the mother. I find it quite difficult to give a clear-cut answer as a person. I find it quite difficult to give an unequivocal answer. But what I try to do as a pro-life person is to say, see, what are the major reasons why people commit abortion? Now, let's attack it. Right? What are the major reasons? One, financial reasons. Two, mental health. These are things we can find solutions to. Let us reduce it. 60 million people have been aborted in the world. That is more than the people in Canada. So again, people have miscarriages. Miscarriages have happened. People have lost babies. People have had stillbirths. Right? So the solution, the things pro-lifers should focus on is, what are the major reasons why people commit abortion? Right? And then whatever those major reasons are, can we help bring a solution to them? So I don't know if that balances the point between me and you.
To some degree, yeah, it does. It does. Because if we know, okay, what is the main solution? But I think it's basically, like you said, financial situation or just the state of the well-being, or sorry, the state of the being of the mother at the time. Yeah. It's not going to be convenient to have a child. Yeah. Like, it's way, I would say it's way better, but I would say that instead of you giving birth to a child that's going to go through an elongated process of suffering, why not, like, not encourage that? Because, like, for instance, now we have situations whereby mothers are dumping babies in dustbin. Yeah. That's a very terrible, but it's...
Again, yeah. We provided a solution to that, right? Foster homes. And I believe, for me personally, I don't have a problem adopting a child, right? If my spouse, that's if I end up getting married, is fine with that, then so be it. You see, the thing is, everybody would give you their story. Everybody comes up with the story. You see people like Grant Cardone who lived a very impoverished life. You see people like Ben Carson. So at the end of the day, what are we even looking at? If you are concerned about the child being born, living in an impoverished life, then pro-lifers should provide a solution, which is foster homes. In America, there are some Catholic churches that do that. You'll be raised in the church. When the child is born when the child is maybe old enough, maybe 5, 6, and are you financially ready and want to take up the responsibility of having a child? And so, come on, pick up a baby. If you do not care, like many people do not care to come back and pick up the child, then the child will be raised in the foster homes and see those people as their parent or as his or her parent, and the child grows up to be who he's supposed to be in the society. So, I mean, that is that for me. So, Daniel, Jake, do you have any, you know, counterpoint to what I said before I move to Daniel? Jake? Okay, so...
Better refine the reasons why people go for it. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You said you better refine what?
Yeah, better refine the reasons why people go for this thing, and we should attack it. For most of the issues, you've provided a very good point of engagement for most of them. But there are still some reasons, like for instance, the ones that we say like the 0.01%, which are ectopic pregnancies or issues whereby the woman had zero control over like the conception.
Yeah.
And those ones, they should give some form of choice to the mother to have an abortion, not just drawing a hard line that say, okay, it wasn't any fault of your doing, but basically, for instance, the issue of rape.
I'm struggling to hear you.
Whereby she did not want to have.
I'm struggling to hear you.
She did not want to conceive the child, but she did conceive.
Okay, I mean, I'm struggling to hear you, but I think I pretty much get what you said, right? And I think I think in cases, Daniel, I know you have some answers to what the question being raised, but just a minute or two will do. So in cases of rape, first, rape is a very dangerous act. No human being should ever face such things. And rapists should be killed, castrated, and their name written off from history. And while we must be very, very sensitive in cases of rape, or discussing people not getting abortion in case of rape, I also think that if there are steps we can take to help the child, while we understand that, this was out of your control, if there's a way we can help the child, I'll give an example. I think a particular celebrity, I can't really remember his name, his mother was raped, and she went through mental clinic and a whole lot of very rigorous processes for her to give birth. And she gave birth to this child, her only son. And the man, and the guy I think he's a musician or so, I can't really remember his name. And he's here, he has impacted the world to a degree. I think the person I'm talking about should be Justin Bieber, I'm not really sure. But the point I'm trying to make is, in those cases, we should be sensitive. But if there is any chance at all to save the child, any chance at all, then I think we should explore those opportunities. Daniel, do you want to say anything, or we should just move?
Not to prolong the conversation and stuff like that, it's just, when we talk about women abandoning children at orphanages, first off, you know, and I think using that as an argument for abortion is quite dishonest, because we are running under the assumption that every single one of these women who dump their children at the orphanage, do it because they can't raise the child, which we assume that, you know, rich people don't give their children off to orphanages, rich people don't abandon their children, rich, able-bodied, able-minded women cannot commit, you know, this act of abandoning children. And it's like, that's very, very insincere in a very, very big way, because you just focus on one side. I'm like, yeah, this is the only truth that matters when you talk about this thing. And then when you talk about, you know, pro-lifers should do this thing, I think if pro-choicers are, I hope I can say that pro-choicers, if they are very, very honest that the reason why they fight for abortion is that they care about the mother and they care about the child, then the onus should be on them also to also create ways to remove the problem of finance, to remove the problem of mental health, to remove the problem, you know, all these problems that they say are reasons for abortion. They should also, you know, make efforts to provide care, as you say that pro-lifers should. They should also make, you know, efforts to do that, to solve those problems. So I know this is a very, very big topic, and it's not like we are going to find answers to it this night and time is gone, but I just wanted to point that out, that if you say pro-lifers, you know, should create a way to remove the finance problem, pro-choicers too should create a way to remove the finance problem.
Yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. I agree with you. So thank you all who have contributed. Daniel, Jake, Bolu, am I missing any other person? Thank you, Mary Alabi. I can see you. Thank you, Mercy, Sarah. I think I should know who Emmanuel is, but thank you, Emmanuel. Thank you, IBK. Thank you, Daniel, Rada. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Akan. Thank you all very much. Next week, we're going to be talking about a very interesting person, Martin Luther. Martin Luther, who is a reformer and anti-Semitic. He was a priest. He liked, you know, he's a Jesuit priest, and somehow he hated the Jews. I don't know how that happened, but next week we'll come to find out. Thank you all for agreeing to disagree, and do have a wonderful weekend and have a wonderful day. Thank you, and remain forever blessed. Bye.